This is Mile High.
Do I want to tell the story or do I want to show the message?
You've got a lot of work to do between Mile High.
The time has come where we can know.
We have a responsibility, an ethical and moral responsibility.
We have to do it better in order to move people along.
Up, down, inside out.
If you get your mind right,
it is not. It is a receiver of thought.
Because love is my first technique.
It's now time for the show.
Welcome to the Mile High Podcast. This is your host, Dr. Daniel Knowles, coming to you at an altitude of 5,280 feet, where our guests will be visiting soon, that we'll be introducing in just a moment. And also want to make sure, if you're listening to this podcast, to make sure you hit subscribe and never miss a podcast. They're on iTunes, on Stitcher, on Google, on YouTube, on Facebook. We want to make sure you never miss them. They're here weekly, every Thursday. We give you great chiropractic content for doctors and students to help you save more lives with chiropractic. And also, mark your calendar, if you have not already or you've been living under a rock, for Mile High 7, which is August 15th to 18th, 2019. You can learn more about it at www.riseuptomilehigh.com. And with that being said, let's introduce our guest today. Dr. Ian Bulow comes from one of my favorite areas, Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. He's the middle of five kids, and he is committed to spreading the vision, mission, and message of chiropractic. And does so incredibly, particularly with the upper cervical approaches, particularly Blair, and is an instructor. And I always love seeing his videos live and his message for chiropractic. And we're grateful to have him on the Mile High Podcast. Welcome to the show, Dr. Ian Bulow.
Well, thanks for having me, Doc. It's a pleasure being here.
Well, we're glad to have you here. And your background in chiropractic and all that you've shared that I've been following has been really very inspirational. Tell people a little bit so they can get to know you a little bit. How you found your way into this chiropractic world.
Yeah, I mean, as we all have different stories, right? And I think most of the ones that have made it and made impact and have gotten on the other side, you know what I mean, have gone through something. You don't really get the enjoyment out of life until you've gone through a few things, usually. And I'm no exception. I think everyone's got an interesting story to tell. Mine, in a nutshell, was I graduated from Palmer Davenport in 2008, opened a practice with a buddy of mine who left the practice within 4 months. Not anything bad, just circumstantial. So I was left running a 3,000 square foot state-of-the-art clinic by myself with all the overhead that comes from that. So one of the best pieces of advice I got was from Dr. Darren White. Shout out to Darren. He said, you know, you're going to disappear for a few years, right? You're going to disappear. You're going to learn a lot, and that's okay. You know, and that was one of the best pieces of advice I had. Talk about practice management, is you're going to disappear for a bit. You're going to work really hard. And that's what I did. By then, I was already doing Blair work. I learned that in school, and we can talk about that in a bit. But when it comes to my practice, opened in 2008, disappeared for a couple years, running my practice, getting it off the ground and all that. 5 years in, I went through the first ever upper cervical diplomate program. Around that time that finished, I moved my clinic and kind of rebranded. I was with a franchise initially, rebranded. And we've been in the same region where I am now for the last 3 to 4 years. And it's called Revive Upper Cervical Chiropractic. We do really top-notch, high-end upper cervical work, complete with cone beam 3D scanning, infrared imaging, pre-post resting, all that kind of fun stuff. So, and I love it, man. I've had a lot of really cool mentors over the years, both in the philosophical world and the art world. Sigafoos was a big mentor of mine when it comes to philosophy. Andy Roberts, as a lot of people know, may he rest in peace, was a big influence on me with technique, as well as my Blair instructors. But yeah, it feels like I've been around a while, even though I don't think I have been around all that long. It's only been 10 years, which you know, isn't that long, but just feels like it's been a while, and I've loved every minute of it.
So. Well, and we're loving what you contribute to chiropractic and why we have you on the podcast, because we need more practitioners like yourself. And you mentioned upper cervical work, and I've got to tell you, I being a Sherman College graduate, I have a big respect and big admiration for upper cervical practitioners, and also just about the upper cervical spine, and also because that's my my dad, that was his foundation as well. So what brought you into the upper cervical world?
Yeah, that's a good question. I honestly, when I went through Palmer, we had a class in the core curriculum on toggle recoil upper cervical, right? What BJ was doing, side posture work. And my initial thought, to be perfectly honest, and some people may be able to relate with this, but my initial thought was, what in the world is this dogmatic BS? Honestly, you know, you go in and I'm thinking, the only reason that this school is teaching this antiquated approach is because this crazy BJ guy did it. So naturally it's quote unquote Palmer College, so they have to teach it, right? Why else would you only look at two bones when you can look at all 26, right? So it was just one of those things where I was just a little, like most students, we think we know it all and whatnot. But anyhow, through that trimester, I got in touch with the Delta Sigma Chi fraternity, which kind of opened my eyes to chiropractic philosophy. So then upper cervical started to make a little bit more sense, you know, because we're talking brainstem now, we're talking really the heart of the nervous system and everything else. And so I was like, okay, I get that, right? And then at the same time, I was going through the talk, the Gonstead Club. So I liked, my analytical brain liked the nervous scope and measuring heat breaks and taking x-rays and segmental adjusting and skin-on-skin contact and all the analytics. Like that kind of met, that kind of satisfied that part of my brain. But then what really did it for me was two things. Number one, you'd have these guys come in and with that would show full spine thermal readings where the heat breaks in the middle and lower part of the spine would calm down with an upper cervical adjustment. So my analytical brain said, oh, hold on a minute. If they're getting the outcomes that I want with less adjustments, that makes sense from a philosophical standpoint, right? Because innate intelligence knows everything. You're just trying to help innate. So the more minimal the intervention or the amount of interventions, the better. So that made sense philosophically and rationally. And then the only other thing that layered on top of that was we had a guy named James Tomasi come and visit, who was a trigeminal neuralgia patient. And TN is that, you know, as we're talking to doctors and students, so I'm sure they're very much aware of what TN is. But the suicide disease, crazy, intense, painful, all that kind of stuff. And he had a recovery story he was sharing. And he would just stop every couple minutes and he'd look into the room of students, you know, and he'd stop and he'd look and he'd literally say, have I told you guys I love you yet? Like this guy, he's like in his 60s and he's telling us students that he loves us, you know? And then he's like, you're needed, man. Like you're really needed. And it just blew my mind. I was like, what in the world, you know? So it kind of fed my analytical brain, but it also fed my emotional brain. And I was like, I'm down, whatever, let's go, you know? And so that turned me on to upper cervical. And the only other thing I would say to that is by the end of that trimester, we finished up toggle. And it was time to take electives, right? You get to the point in your chiropractic education where you can take electives. And I had my choice of electives for fifth try, you know, I had all these different electives. And I was asking a fraternity brother, I said, what should I take? And he said, did you like toggle? I'm like, yeah, you know, I kind of liked the analytics and precision of it all. And he said, well, you should try Blair. And I said, why? And he goes, well, it's like a badass toggle. and he was kind of right. You know, if you look at the videos of BJ adjusting on the rooftops, it doesn't look like what most people do when they do toggle. If you look at how BJ adjusted, you'll notice his elbows, they rotate. He has a lot of torque in his adjustments. And well, it's a long story why, but the bottom line is that's more similar to a Blair adjustment. Blair is like toggle, but with a heck of a lot more torque. And the x-rays are a bit more, I don't want to be disrespectful. I'm trying to think of the best way to say it. They're a bit more particular, right? We're getting down to the joint level. So it just satisfies that hyper-analytical brain a little bit more. So I got into Blair right around the same time I got into upper cervical, and then I just never really looked back. So that's how I got started in it anyhow.
Excellent. And I know being a Sherman grad, Perry Rush carried the Blair torch for a long time for us, and we really got a lot of value out of that experience with him. And the core of the philosophy, two things that I think are vital for chiropractic period. And actually, I had this discussion at Sherman recently where I said and these two factors are what makes Sherman College Sherman. And one is the objective, but that's not enough, because the objective of locating and adjusting spinal subluxations is that. However, there's more than that, which is that analysis concept of that, is the nerve system dynamic or is it static? That part, and we may vary in different techniques in that area, but that concept is vital. I know it's vital to upper cervical work, clearly.
Yeah.
And without it, it's you're not having that concept of is innate, you know, being able to make changes and adapt versus that it's you're not adapting. And that's what I so love and appreciate, but that upper cervical practitioners hold that high. I want more chiropractors to hold it high with whatever analytical approach they use. I think it's such a vital key area. And what you said about, you know, can we get more change by doing less, right? Mm-hmm. And is there a way to do that? And every technique should be looking at that, not just upper cervical. But you know, how can I do get more change by doing less? So innate does, you know, I know that innate's doing the job.
Yeah, and I think BJ really was the triune of the three-legged stool, you know, the philosophy, science, and art. Because it's like you gotta have both, like you're saying. And the way I always look at it is the way it is now. Like, unfortunately, over the years, the upper cervical world has been kind of off in a distant corner doing their hyper analytical engineering kind of stuff. And the problem with upper cervical is that within the upper cervical community, if we get too analytical, too measured, too calculated, as much as the indicators that we're looking at are accurate and valid and reliable, we can lose sight of the innate philosophy, right? It's not just an effective treatment option for headaches, dizziness, and vertigo, right? And balancing the spine, shoulders, and hips. So lower back and sciatic, you can throw there and that in too. But at the same token, we can't just take our philosophy of enhancing life and health and then just, you know, throw people down the stairs and let them snap, crackle, and pop the whole way down and be like, aha, but, you know, innate's going to take care of it. It's like, no, we got to have somewhere in the middle is the reality, which is that life is intelligent, that innate intelligence is a real thing and is running this system. And we can measure that. We can calculate that. We can work with that, not in spite of that, you know? And I think that's where I want to like bring these worlds together a little bit more, because you have a lot of, I remember one of my mentors, Dr. John Hilpish. He's in Minnesota, I believe. He's a Blair guy.
Yep.
Busy practice, good guy. Actually, it was on the board of Sherman for a while as well.
Right.
If I'm not mistaken, his story was that I think he was a national grad or some pretty liberal school, and he kind of lost his way and he found some Reggie tapes, you know, and got turned on to Reggie Gold, got turned on to the philosophy, and he's like, my practice doubled in size overnight. He goes, but that just meant I had more people that I wasn't taking care of properly. He didn't have any art. Like, he went to a school that taught a lot of therapy and he had no idea how to take care of the spine. You know what I mean? So, but he got the philosophy and he like built his practice up, but still was not really like getting any results. Was kind of lost, you know? But then he got turned on, and not to say you have to do upper cervical, but how you do one thing is how you do everything. And BJ Palmer, if you take nothing else from him, the guy was specific. He was obsessive. You know what I mean? And you look at any good quality subluxation detection correction technique, it's specific. Everything's measured. Everything's calculated. It's not guesswork. It's not, because you could take our philosophy and do some crazy stuff with it. But if you have research and you have reliability and you have validity, then man, you can like, you can do some pretty powerful things for your communities, which is what it's all about, you know? So yeah, I love it. I dig it.
So now one of the most common detractors in towards upper cervical care is, oh, well, you know, people aren't going to want that, that you just check them and not actually adjust them, that you might see them for two or three or more visits and not adjust them. Yeah. What's your take on that?
Oh, man, it's funny. Like, it's so funny. It's almost like if you're in practice a while, right, and then you go out in the community, and you run into someone, they say, what do you do? And you say, you're a chiropractor, or you're introduced to someone, say, oh, here's my chiropractor. And someone says like, oh, is that stuff safe? I heard that kills babies, you know, or something crazy. Like you almost laugh. Like, unless you're in a political level, like when you're so far removed from that false narrative, it's almost like, oh my gosh, yeah, I forgot about that. Like, that's actually a thing. Like, that's a concern. The reality is, the truth is, you got to be kidding me. People love it. Like, people love it. Like, if you tell someone that you're going to tie their shoelaces, they should be able to look down and see that their freaking shoelaces are tied. If I say that I'm going to correct you, then you should be corrected. You should be, you know what I mean? Like, I'm going to remove a subluxation. Okay, so let's just do that. So I adjust you, subluxation taken care of. So what if I check it 5 seconds later? Is it going to need to be adjusted later again? It's like, shouldn't, right? I mean, if you just adjusted the person, it shouldn't. What about 5 minutes? What about 5 hours? What about 5 days? Like, you tell me. Like, there should be a time of space and time in where you're holding the alignment. So the concept of holding is actually not really the problem, because we would be honest with ourselves and say, yeah, they're subluxation clear after I adjust them, and all I'm saying is, well, for how long, you know? And I think any technique should do that. You should ask yourselves how long. And here's the funny part about it too. Watch this now. If you're getting adjusted 3 days a week, or whatever your criteria is to see a new patient, right? And we're gonna set you up for 2 days a week, 3 days a week, for whatever it is. What's your justification for backing off? If you're adjusting them that frequency per week, then why in the world would you ever back off? I mean, the only answer would be because they're feeling better. And I was like, oh, hold on a minute. Now you're treating symptoms. You see what I'm saying? Like, what is it that you have to see some improvement in your measurements? And if you're seeing improvements, then you should back off. And then you say, well, then they are getting better. But I would say if they're always getting adjusted, you're not seeing them enough then, right? It's you could play with that conversation. But what I would say from a technical standpoint is that you should see stability. And your goal, no matter what technique you do, should be to see that play out for longer and longer periods of time over the life of the patient. And then let me tell you something, patients like it. Yes, in the beginning, they're not used to it. Like, it's a foreign concept. Going to a chiropractor and not getting adjusted is like, oh, wait, that's different. But they absolutely like that. Like, one of the practice management tips I heard, had lots of mentors, and I like to give shout outs, but this one came from Jeff Scholten, he's just brilliant. The funny thing about Jeff Scholten, and hopefully he never sees this, because I don't like stroking his ego, because I like to always remind him, I got the valedictorian of the diplomate class that he was in with me. But he is brilliant. And but no, he's a great guy. Funny thing about him though, you don't really see him on Facebook much, because he's busy running his practice and traveling all over the world and doing his thing. But he's a NUCA doctor out of Calgary, Canada. But one of the things I heard, and he's president of the NUCA Association right now. But one of the things that I remember him saying from the stage was like, you know, everyone likes to read a book, right? There's a beginning and an end and chapters in the middle. And patients, when they start care, they want to know where they are in the story. You know what I mean? And having stability is a significant part of the journey. Like, oh, I'm making it. I'm not just spinning my wheels. I'm getting better. Even if they're still in pain, it's like, gosh, that's great. I'm actually making progress. What I think a very frustrating thing for patients is just not knowing. It's the unknown. Am I in the right place, number one? Can you help me, number two? And am I getting better? Am I progressing? That's a big deal. So no, I think that it's clinically has integrity. You should see stability and you want it, and you want it to improve over time. And I think practically, when it comes to the relationships with patients, I think they actually appreciate knowing that they're getting better. So I kind of like it.
And that brings up another area that's very related, but chiropractors in general often have a challenge with, which is accountability. So really, accountability has to come into what you're recommending, what outcomes you're getting, and that really has to do with, are you actually doing some kind of outcome assessment?
Yes.
And not a pain-based one. Something yeah. that's an outcome assessment for, has the integrity of the spine and nerve system somehow changed? What was the integrity of it when they came in? And are you reassessing that? And not because their XYZ pain has gone away or not, because that's not telling us if they're subluxated or not, but rather that we're actually holding ourselves accountable to delivering whatever it is that we say we're delivering in our approach or technique.
So I love that. Let me talk about that for a minute, because I think it's super important. So one thing, it's all a symptom, right? It's all a sign or symptom. Whether it's a headache or a leg check or a thermal pattern, it's a sign or a symptom, right? The question is, how related is what we are doing to the subluxation, right? How close is it to that subluxation? And there's two things. And here, I think this is super important. I'm glad you brought it up. But like, when people come into your space, into your clinic, they are giving you their time and their money for a clinical outcome. They are not coming in because you're a really nice guy or gal, and because you happen to have the same worldview, and I'm just going to pay you so I can hear about your chiropractic philosophy. They're coming for a...
Wait, I thought they were paying to be in the Chiro Club.
What's that?
Aren't they paying to be in the Chiro Club?
That's right, yeah, yeah. I haven't had too many patients. I've had a couple, but I haven't had too many that walk in and be like, I just want to be checked for subluxations and to make sure that my subluxations are gone. And even if they were, subluxations have a physical, clinical detriment to your expression of your life and health. This is a chiropractic is a worldview in terms of its philosophy, but as an application, it is a clinical thing. And so because of that, I recommend when we have our indicators that they have two criteria. Number one is reliability, right? Reliability, you could check the patient multiple times and come up with the same measurement, whatever your measurement is, that it's repeatable to you and ideally to other people. Get 10 different doctors to do the same assessment. I would love to see that. And then validity. Does it mean what you think it means, right? We used to think, BJ thought, and again, maybe some people could still argue this, but I think they'd have a hard time. BJ thought that the temperature he was reading was because the misalignment was so big, it was choking off the mental impulse. And because of that friction that it was causing, that it was reducing the speed of the impulse, building up friction and heat. I don't think that's actually a very valid argument right now. And again, maybe it's blasphemy to say that, right? I don't have a what would BJ do bracelet on my wrist because it's not about what BJ would do. It's how he was thinking at that time. That was the best he had in science. Now we know that surface area temperature is capillary dilation, which is regulated by the sympathetic nervous system. So there's a whole lot more that goes into our analysis in terms of our understanding. So the point is, it was still reliable. What he was doing was very reliable. But the validity, what does it mean? What are the layers between the subluxation and what you're measuring, right? So just having those two things, it doesn't matter what you do, as long as they are reliable and valid. And of course, integrity, they're within the scope of our chiropractic philosophy. But I think that, yeah, reliable and valid measures is a great way to get started if you want to start looking at the outcomes and see those things to give you a reason to back off. You know what I mean? I'll say just a couple other things here. Anybody can find a reason to adjust somebody. You look hard enough, you will find something, right? It's what you want to look for are the signs of stability, right? Or is innate on the job, because you're saying that you let innate do its work, but give it time to work. Is it on the job? We say, don't take that Tylenol, let me just adjust you, right? Well, I might say, don't work on that segment, let innate work that thing out. Right? Like there's room for that conservative nature in all technique systems. Just look for it. You were a half inch short leg last time. You're an eighth of an inch now. That's phenomenal. That's really good. You know what I mean? You could go off the range of motion. You were segmentally, you felt like a grizzly steak before, and now you feel like a baby's bottom. That's pretty darn good. You know, like back off from that segment for that visit. It's like, you know what? We're going to leave that alone today. That's holding. Even if you're going from 5 adjusted segments to 2, that's great. You're saying, yeah, we're going to, this one's technically holding, right? I look at it with a whole visit potentially, but it's the same sort of concept. So by all means, start measuring. Just start writing this stuff down. Start like looking at patterns and things like that. You can do it with any, it doesn't have to be upper cervical. It could be any technique. It's all chiropractic. So.
Yes, and that's vital. And that's why I'm also very excited that you had this upper cervical symposium that you're part of coming out in the summer, which is June 6th to 8th in Colorado, in Denver. Yeah, so tell me a little bit about that.
So the upper cervical community has gone through just this very interesting bell curve of development, you know what I mean? It started with BJ running the whole show. And then BJ dies, and his pupils from different generations of BJ take over. You know what I mean? You had Bill Blair, who learned from BJ at a time where BJ was looking at asymmetries. So what is Blair? Blair is an upper cervical technique that looks at asymmetries, but adjusts similar to how BJ did, side-lying, drop headpiece. Then you had Lyle Sherman, who left at a time when BJ was doing maybe a little more knee chest. He liked knee chest. So now you have Sherman to Michael Kale and all the rest that do knee chest. Then you have, Drostick, John F. Drostick. When BJ died, Drostick presentations go on, and Drostick's like the godfather of like NUCA, orthospinology. Then we've got AO, ADVO, EPIC, QSM3. Now you have, over the decades, you have this kind of like half dozen to a dozen different upper cervical camps that historically were kind of like holier than thou, right? If I'm a NUCA guy, I'll never refer to a knee chest guy. And if I'm a knee chest guy, I'll never refer to a Blair guy, you know, because, oh, you don't scan, or you don't do this x-ray, or you don't post-check, or you don't. Bottom line is ego, right? So then about 10 years ago when I graduate, there's this franchise called Upper Cervical Health Centers that said, look, we should brand and bring everyone together under one label, right? And they're not really around anymore. There's a couple of evolutions of that now, but the bottom line is, through it all, that was the starting point of saying, look, we're more similar than dissimilar, right? We're a bunch of different islands. Let's talk together. So then, in the middle of all that, Life West and Jerry Klum bring together the leaders of different camps and forms the actual Council on Upper Cervical, which is a council within the ICA. That starts the Diplomate program, which started about 6 years ago, was the first Diplomate program. The second Diplomate, second round, just graduated this past weekend. They just finished their exams. They had their final board exam. And now we're starting the symposiums, which are either once a year, once every other year, but a place for our Diplomates to present their research. And so the symposium is, yes, it's in June. It's the second symposium we've done as a council now. It's going to feature the graduation of our second round of upper cervical Diplomates. And the one thing I would say about the symposium and the current state of upper cervical is that we've got all these techniques that are coming together now and sharing knowledge and research. And the analogy is, it's like mixed martial arts, right? Back in the day, you had the wrestler versus the boxer versus the jiu-jitsu guy, right? You had Matt Hughes was the wrestler. And the first true mixed martial artist, I would say, would be like George St. Pierre, who was able to defend against Matt Hughes' wrestling and then knock him out, right? And then you have iteration after iteration to now you have these well-rounded fighters that can do it all, right? In upper cervical, we're starting to bring it back together to the same table. We're also not afraid to talk to other professionals. So at the symposium, we have Dr. Chris Centeno, an MD doing injections. It's like, whoa, hold on a second. I'm like, wait, hold on a minute. What are we talking about here? Why would we have some medical guy at a chiropractic conference? That's heresy. That's blasphemy. It's like, well, wait a second. What holds the upper cervicals together? A ridiculous amount of ligaments. Wouldn't you want, like, we learn about bones. We look at x-rays and we know bone. And then we, through our philosophy, we know there's a nervous system and what it does. And we trace the nerve tracings and all that. What about all the connective tissue? Like when you put your hands on somebody, you're not just pushing a skeleton around. You're pushing a whole lot of tissue. And the guys that know the most about tissue, let me tell you, I'll just let you know, these interventional radiologists that know all the different intricate ligaments and all that. They can tell you all the grade of ligament damage. They can tell you why. So now when you go back to your patient and you're wondering why they're not stabilizing, you can start to think of it more holistically. It's not just a bone and a nerve. Now, you're talking to a principal, old school MOPI, MOPI, subluxation correction chiropractor right now. So I'm not saying that it's not bone and nerve. It is bone and nerve. But there's layers of other stuff as well. And so the symposium is a place where it is safe to communicate with these guys. And that's one other thing we probably won't have time to talk about. If you want to know where most of my referrals are coming from right now, outside of my patients, it's other medical providers. Because guess what? If I don't tell them to go F themselves because they're antiquated, old school, going to kill you with your vaccines, when I stop yelling at them and I actually communicate with them and tell them what we're actually doing, and we're not competing with them, we're doing something totally different, it's kind of like, oh, that's really cool. You know what I mean? Like, I remember my wife, she had a fully ruptured disc back when we first graduated, right? 3 kids, 4 years, cesarean sections, it's a whole nightmare story. We needed pain relief. She woke up, could barely move her leg. I'm an upper cervical guy. I'm not going to put her in a side posture roll. I've got no experience with that. I'd probably make it worse. And it's a full rupture. So I take her to a guy who does decompression, which by my definition is rank mixing. Sorry, just is. It's what I was taught at that time. It's not subluxation. It's acute care of an allopathic lesion. So I take it there. And that was the first time that my eyes were kind of like opened to this guy. His name is Dr. Peter Peduzzi. Great guy, phenomenal guy. And I remember thinking to myself, oh, these mixers aren't terrible people. Like, you know what I mean? Like, because we've got, believe me, in the principled world, let's be honest, we're very critical. And critical is a nice way of saying judgmental eagles. Like, we can be that way sometimes. It just is. And so that was a microcosm of like where I was opened up to where people may not practice the way that I practice. It doesn't mean that they're bad human beings. It means that they're just educated a different way and they're practicing a different way that I might disagree with. But now you take that to the medical world, and we say that medicine, like, there's a time and place, right? And as you know all too well, we can get into that, but it's like there's a time and place for everything. And chiropractic's not a cure-all, so stop acting like it. If it's not a cure-all, then your indicators shouldn't be based on the condition. They should be based on subluxation. But if someone has something outside of that, like if someone comes in and they, like, their indicators are clear, right? And they have a headache. And it's like, well, I remember this happened early on in practice. I was like, what did you have, like, to drink today? Like, have you had any water today? And they're like, they literally asked if coffee counted. And I was like, no, it doesn't count. You're doing well. Go home, drink a lot of water. Let's check it next week. Now, to some in our profession, that's rank mixing. The fact that I brought up water in my four walls, I am now a mixer, right? What I'm saying is there's a range there. There's what you do clinically, which should be chiropractic, and then there's everything else. And you shouldn't do everything else, but if you educate yourself on it, it makes you able to help your patients when they're hurting in different areas. It's okay when they're holding because I can give them other resources if I want to. Give your body time. If you think you need whatever, go see that guy. He's really good at that thing. You know what I mean? Like, that's okay. There's a range. There's a time and place. And all I'm saying is when you're comfortable in your own skin as a chiropractor, then you can start being comfortable associating with other people because they don't threaten you. You know what I mean? Medical person doesn't threaten me. They don't do anything I do. You know what I mean? I don't care. But if my person needs surgery, I need to know where to send them. If they need whatever. Now, granted, we're trying to save people from this. But all I'm just saying is that with education comes identity and boundaries. And it's okay to play with other professionals so long as you know who the heck you are first. Then you can responsibly start to play. So I say all that to say when people look up our symposium, at first they may be threatened by it. Because it doesn't say chiropractic. It says advances in spinal care. What the heck's that? Right? That's threatening to us. We say, oh, they're running away from chiropractic. No, we're not. We're making ourselves more accessible to the other people, though. Come play over here. We're not gonna randomly manipulate you for back pain. We're gonna assess you for subluxation of the craniocervical junction, which you as a neurologist may actually care about. So come on over. Come see what we're up to. See what I'm saying? Like, it's just a different vibe, and that's okay. So long as we know the rules, we We know what is chiropractic. We know it's not. We can start to play a little bit. And I think that's better for everybody. We've got some really cool stuff going on. So I just have to kind of like, it's a little bit of a long answer, but I just know in the straight world, the more critical folks out there may misunderstand what we're trying to do, but trust me, it is what it is. It's strict upper cervical chiropractic, but we're playing a little bit to round out our brand so we can make a bigger impact in the healthcare space.
And this is all fascinating, how much stuff is going on that's positive in chiropractic. And it tells me again that, you know, you talk about the judgmentalism, or we see that so much. And I've got to say, even as I get more and more firmer in my philosophy, and every day over 20 years, you keep getting firmer in your philosophy and you grow in it. Yeah, I also have learned that, you know, we need more chiropractors that love each other than throw rocks at each other, you know, because totally. We have a lot of rock throwing, right? So more love each other, because we've got a big job. And especially if we're facing the direction of adjustment and subluxation, you know, like I when you're facing away from that, you know, like the subluxation deniers, I don't have as much love. But when you're facing the direction of subluxation adjustment, there's a lot of love and a lot of leeway, and hey, we're all in the same family. You know, they're trying to, you know, right? And we may have different points of view, but we've got to work together. Like us, you know, like we practice very differently, but we have the same values at our foundation that we so are dear, so important to chiropractic. So with all that's coming up, can you tell people, one, how they get more in touch with you and follow your video blogs, and the upper cervical events that are coming up?
Yeah, absolutely. And yeah, I'm sure you and I could talk for hours, but I know we got to wrap it up here. But I would love to connect with folks if they have any questions. I'm available at Dr. Ian Bulow on all social media platforms. And the blogs that I do, if you go on Facebook and you look up hashtag UCVlog, I'm rebranding it to Staying Connected, hashtag Staying Connected. That's the blog. And I go over a lot of pretty interesting like technique stuff, trying to like let out the secrets, you know what I mean? Like, this is what a pattern looks like. This is what leg checks look like. This is what 3D looks like. Like, again, the old world was, no, you got to come to my seminar and that's when you'll get all the secrets. Well, now it's like, no, this is what we're doing. This is what's going on. If you want hands-on instruction, you got to go to seminars for that. But yeah, they can look me up there. I also started a podcast as well called Staying Connected with Dr. Ian Bulow, so people can look that up. Right now it's mainly life principles and stuff, but I'm going to start getting a little bit more technical and clinical with it. But it really is just my outlet for communication with just some of the great conversations I've had with chiropractors and patients. So there's that. When it comes to seminars, really the main two that I play with would be icaupercervical.com. That's where you'll find the symposium, as well as Grand Rounds, which are on-site weekends at a clinician's office, at a chiropractor's office. So all of that's at icaupercervical.com. And then when I teach the Blair Upper Cervical Technique. And if I'm doing a seminar somewhere, that's at blairtechnique.com. And if you would like the Blair method taught in your region, you just have to get connected with me. And it's just supply and demand. If there's enough docs that are interested, I'm happy to come out. And anything I can do when it comes to technique, obviously, is kind of my bandwagon right now, or my brand right now. But even if you're a new grad, just trying to find your way in terms of like looking into upper cervical, or being a cash-based practice or value-based practice, I'm here to help, man. That's the whole mission, is just to make an impact. So happy to connect with anybody in the future.
Outstanding. We are so grateful for all the good things you're doing in chiropractic, and all your contributions to chiropractic. One, to inspire students, and two, to inspire doctors. And we really need it at this point in the chiropractic profession overall, to have more resources to get the philosophy, the science, and the art. And I really want to acknowledge you for stepping up in all those areas, because we need people to carry that torch and light a fire on others. So, you know, thank you so much for all you do. And thank you again for being part of the Mile High Podcast, as well as encouraging people to subscribe, as we are telling you on this right now. And we look forward to seeing all of you at Mile High, www.riseuptomilehigh.com, August 15th to 18th, 2019. And keep changing and saving lives and spines and minds with chiropractic. And the world needs all of you. So thank you again, Dr. Ian Bulow, and we appreciate all you're doing for TIC.
Thanks, guys. We'll see you.
Like our page on Facebook, www.facebook.com/milehighchiro.